Welcome to the Calvary St. George's Sermon Podcast, proclaiming the historic faith of Christ and Him crucified. These podcasts are recorded and produced by the parish of Calvary St. George's in the city of New York. For more information about our ministries, head to calvarystgeorges.org.
It is wonderful to be back home. My wife and I we're home. By the way, look at these flowers. I gave those, and those, there was a wedding here yesterday afternoon. Man. Well, I don't imagine that many of you here this morning know a woman named Deborah Ricketts, because her job is very much behind the scenes, but it's an absolutely crucial job. Let me give you an example. In the movie, The Raiders of the Lost Ark, there was a scene, in which a map of Thailand fills the screen with the word Thailand in bold letters. The movie is set in 1936. Unfortunately, Thailand was called Siam until 1939, and Deborah is the woman who spotted that error and then pruned it back. That's what she's paid to do. In the movie Die Hard 2, Bruce Willis enters a phone booth in Washington, D.C. to make a phone call. Unfortunately, a sign in the phone booth points to the West Coast. The sign says Pacific Bell. And Deborah spotted that sign and pruned it back. Well, I tell you about Deborah because she is a kind of a vine dresser. Her job is to create the best film possible by inspecting it carefully and pruning it, cutting it where it's needed. And as Nancy just read for us, Deborah also points us this morning to Jesus, the vine dresser. And in today's gospel, Jesus speaks in some detail about the whole world of vineyards and vines and grapes and branches. And in fact, Jesus introduces himself as a kind of horticulturalist when he says, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower." Then Jesus gives us a lesson in how to grow good grapes. By the way, I wasn't going to say this, but I'll tell you. I once lived for a year with my sister in a barn at her ranch, and it's in Napa Valley. And once we all went to a vineyard after the grapes had been collected, and they allowed us to glean with the second gleaning. And so about 10 of us gathered all these grapes. And then we brought them back home, and my sister had a wine press in her front yard. And we dumped the grapes in, and then all of us took off our shoes and our socks, and we stomped on the grapes, and the juice went down in. And then my ex-brother-in-law, that's all I'm going to say about him, he then bottled all of that juice and let them age for a good solid 2.5 weeks. I mean, it was just disgusting. This has nothing to do with the sermon, but I thought I'd tell you. So, Jesus gives us this lesson in how to grow grapes. He says that the key to quality, five-star, non-ripple grapes is pruning. He says that you have to prune the branches back. You got to cut them back in order to get good grapes. Now, I want to say that the process of pruning is counterintuitive. If I have a vine that's bearing grapes, my inclination is to want to make that vine grow a lot longer and a lot bigger. Why cut back something that's producing something great? Jesus, the horticulturalist, knows better. He knows that if you keep a vine growing on its own, then the grapes eventually will be bitter and they'll shrivel up and they'll die. And he knows that if you prune the vine back, then the grapes are going to be delicious and abundant. And, hate to say it, Jesus knows the same thing about you and me. I said that pruning was counterintuitive. What I mean is that pruning is nothing that I would actually choose on my own. I don't get up in the morning and say, thank you, Lord. I mean, another day of my own plans getting disrupted and my own hopes getting cut back, my own dreams getting diverted, my control of my life getting yanked away. Just can't wait. If I were left to my own devices, I wouldn't do any pruning at all. I would avoid that pain. And I would wither and die. That's why when Jesus says, I am the vine, what he's saying is something like this. I know, Jim, Jake, Nancy, and Camel, that you have neither the will, nor the power, nor even the desire to prune yourselves. And so in order that you may live and grow and bear fruit, I choose to prune myself. I choose to cut myself back even unto death, so that you, my beloved branches at Calvary St. George's Church, may have life. I choose the pruning of the cross. That, as I understand it, is the core of the good news, that when we were stuck, unable to choose what we needed, often not even knowing what we needed, this one-way love of Jesus took our failed prunings on his own shoulders on the cross. So let me give you a little picture of what I mean. Back in the 1400s, there was a bitter feud going on between the Fitzgeralds and the Butlers in Ireland. And at one point, Sir James Butler and his followers took refuge in the chapter house of St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin. They bolted themselves in, trying to be protected from Gerald Fitzgerald and his men. As the siege wore on, Fitzgerald had a change of heart. Here were two families living in the same country, worshiping the same God, in the same church, trying to kill each other. So Fitzgerald called out to Butler, asking him to unbolt the door and to come out. And Butler, understandably a little wary of treachery, declined the invitation. So Fitzgerald seized his spear and chopped a hole in the door big enough for his hand. And then Fitzgerald thrust his entire arm through the hole. And there it was, completely vulnerable, totally undefended, utterly available for being completely chopped off. Inside the chapter house, James Butler took a hold of Fitzgerald's hand with his own hand, and then he opened the door. And the two men embraced, and the feud was over. And that door and that hole exists today. You can go to St. Patrick's Cathedral in Dublin and see the place where Fitzgerald often offered his own arm for pruning. And here's the thing, for you and me, that arm through that door is the arm of our God. And the hand at the end of that arm through the door has the scar of a nail hole. This is the only thing that I know. This self-sacrificing, self-pruning love of Jesus on the cross that is finally able to make you and me come alive and bear fruit. This is the only thing I know, finally. This self-sacrificing, self-pruning love of Jesus on the cross that is able to make Calvary St. George's explode with some new life. And I know that it's happening. This is the only thing I know, this self-sacrificing, self-pruning love of Jesus on the cross, that is finally the only thing that's able to break through this downward spiral of violence and war and vengeance in all the places in this world where we're at war with each other, in Gaza, in Ukraine, streets of Manhattan, the hearts that we brought with us this morning. And so, because the Mockingbird Conference these past few days has been just amazing, I want to close with an image from the Mockingcast podcast that was aired 2 weeks ago. And although Dave Zoll and Sarah Condon and R.J. Heyman didn't use this exact language, they were nonetheless talking about the kind of fruit that may be born on a branch that has been pruned by the self-sacrificing, self-pruning, one-way love of Jesus. The Mockingcast podcast's topic was, how far does forgiveness reach? And Dave read some words by a woman named Denise Uimana. Now, this year, 2024, marks the 30th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide in 1994, where almost a million people were slaughtered in less than 100 days. Denise's husband was killed in the genocide. And Denise writes in her memoir that 21 years after the genocide, in 2015, she decided to broach the subject of forgiveness when she went back to her Rwandan village. She writes this, "I felt apprehensive as I rose to address the people. Were they ready for this? Has any of you been able to forgive?" I asked. To my astonishment, at least a dozen hands shot up, voices calling out, "I have." One of those voices was a woman named Kansildi. I knew that her husband and five of her children had been killed. And all eyes were on this bereaved mother as she stood to speak. She said, "A gang of Interahamwe mobbed my house on April 9, 1994, she began, referring to the Hutu militias that led the genocide. My family was caught by surprise." She stalled for a moment and then plunged on. "A young neighbor, Emmanuel, killed my family. He was arrested and imprisoned the next year. But 3 years ago, in 2012, he was released. Emmanuel tried to come to my house to humble himself. But the village had learned of his arrival and staged a protest, so he could not come that night. Next morning, however, he appeared at my door, pleading for forgiveness. From that day to this, he told me, I have felt continual shame." Kansildi paused again, then concluded quietly, "My heart had been freed from hate by then because we widows had been reading the gospel together. Its message prepared my heart to forgive." Well, at this point in the Mockingbird podcast, Sarah Condon interrupted Dave while he was reading. And she said, "That was one hell of a Bible study." She said, "How lucky would I be to simply stand in the hallway outside the Bible study of those widows." So now here is the end of the memoir that Denise wrote. 4 months later, on my next visit to the village, Kansildi came to greet me. A reticent man walked at her side. "Welcome back, Denise," Kansildi said. "I want you to meet Emmanuel." "Kansildi has become like a mother to me," Emmanuel said quietly. "When I need advice, I go to her. Before I got married, I talked over the details with her. She's the local official who authorized my marriage." And then Kansildi broke in. "Emmanuel's the one I ask for help when my house needs repair. He comes anytime I ask to replace a window or mend the roof. If my cow has problems, I call him, and he knows he's always welcome to share a meal at my home. And then Kasildi said, "He is my son. I don't share this story with you to give you a picture of how much you ought to forgive. I don't know if I could come within a million miles of such forgiveness. I share the story of Kasildi to give you a picture of what our God is like. And so I'd like you to take out the photo that's in your program and look at it, please. The woman on the left is Denise, the author of the memoir. The woman in the center is Kasildi. And the man on the right is Emmanuel. But really, the woman in the middle is Jesus. And that's you and me on the right, forgiven and loved. Amen.
Thank you for listening to our sermon podcast, produced and recorded at the Parish of Calvary St. George's in the city of New York. If you feel led to support the continuing ministry of our parish, we would really appreciate it. You can make a one-time or recurring gift by going to calvarystgeorges.org/give. Thank you for your support.